secure. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of FBC Radio Live. That's right, I'm back home. I'm back from the West Coast, and somewhat back to my normal sleep pattern, although I did wake up very late this morning, hence why we are starting at such an odd hour right now, and probably will only be on for about 20-30 minutes, but we got to ease ourselves into it. There's a lot to get into, there's a lot to discuss, and we have a lot coming up this week, which is going to be a lot of fun to talk about, and a lot of events going on. But the one thing, John, the draft is in the rearview mirror. It is over with. We know who drafted who, and we can finally move on, right? Right, John? We can move on from the draft?
I've moved on, but yeah, I mean, obviously we know that the draft is what it is. And, you know, the thing that I've noticed about the draft, it's its own cottage industry, right? You've got people that this is what they do year-round, analyzing players, doing all of this stuff. So it's a lot bigger than it's ever been. It gets bigger every single year. Heck, the ratings are higher than NBA playoff games. I mean, you more people watch the NFL draft where someone comes up and announces a name that most people don't even know who the hell the guy is, than watching a playoff game, whether it be, you know, Golden State's thrilling win over Memphis yesterday or the Celtics' frustrating loss to Milwaukee. Not that the draft was going on yesterday, but you get my point.
Yeah.
It outdraws the NBA playoffs, which is kind of mind-blowing. But, yeah, it's now in the rearview mirror. And really, you revisit this in 3 years. 3 years from now, you go, okay, that was a really good draft. This guy that was picked in the fourth round turned out better than we thought. Maybe the guy in the first round's not as good as we thought he'd be, and you evaluate at that point. For people to get all bent out of shape either way is kind of laughable. But again, it's a cottage industry. So this is what people do. And, you know, to be important, to feel important, you have to throw yourself into the discussion.
Well, the unfortunate thing, though, John, it seems to have created this echo chamber of sorts among a handful of quote unquote analysis, and whether, you know, you want to include, you know, analytical guys or whatever, but there's this obsession with the quote-unquote consensus board, and by that, I still don't know what that is, considering there is just an infinite number of mock drafts from an infinite number of quote-unquote experts. So I don't understand how and or where you determine there's a consensus board, but this obsession or this need to blindly just trust the, and I mean, it's a sickening cycle, John. Like, you know, so people will come up and we're obviously talking about the Cole Strange pick from the Patriots. It's Strange, Ben Folan, not Strong. Strange. If you're going to criticize the guy, at least get the name right. I mean, it's been 6 days. Like, anyways, there's this community where it's just the cycle of confirmation between them all. It's like, oh, look, this person agrees with me, so I was right. Well, no, you're just seeking out the same type of people that you are, i.e. ones that apparently think Mel Kiper's top consensus board is just perfect, even though, I mean, the guy had Malik Willis going 20th overall. No one criticizes him for that, but he called Cole Strange a reach. So you know what? Ben Volen's going to jump on it, or you know, name any sort of Boston media member that plays by the same shtick, and it's just this echo chamber where they're just speaking to each other, but it creates this, like, you know, oh, hey, you know, in league circles, or the way he worded it was universally panned. Well, universally panned where? Within your own confined little circle? Well, yeah, because you all think alike. And by think alike, I mean you have the inability to actually evaluate and judge film. So you know what you do? You latch onto an easy narrative and you keep beating a dead horse, and that's exactly what Ben Volen's doing. And it's I know I'm calling him out by name, but you know what? It doesn't matter to me. I don't care, because I believe that it's just doing a disservice to this entire coverage, because it's lazy and it clearly shows you. And I mean, again, the guy can't even get the guy's name right. So why would I believe anything that he says about the talent that the player has? Because I don't know. It's frustrating, because it's turning this event into just this toxic reaction, you know, everyone has to have a reaction. and it's like, you know, it has to be bad or it has to be intense or, you know, it has to be this pick. Well, guess what? Like you said, no one knows. You're making educated guesses. And trust me, the coaching staffs, the scouts that actually go and evaluate and judge and grade these players, I don't care. I don't think a single one of them cares what Mel Kiper thinks. Like, mm-hmm. Does anyone sit in a meeting room and say, okay, we got the latest Mel Kiper draft. Let's evaluate our talent evaluations. No. They're like, look at this ridiculousness from Mel Kiper. He has no idea what the hell we're actually thinking. And that's what it is. And here we are giving more credibility to, you know, John Doe that works at some random blog but happens to have a blue check mark. But since he had him on his big board in the third round, well, it's obviously a reach and a bad pick. Well, no. Mm-hmm. If the kid's talented, it fills a hole. Well, guess what? It was a good pick. Now, 3 years from now, like you said, we'll have a better idea of how to judge the player. But, like, just look no further than some of Mel Kiper's glowing reviews of the drafts of, say, and I'm going to use this team as an example because it's kind of the exact opposite, the Ravens. I saw John. Mm-hmm. I saw, and I'm not going to name names here, but I saw someone, you know, not just one person. I mean, this has been kind of like the common theme. If you read Peter King's article today, first of all, I'm sorry. Second of all, he goes in great length praising the Ravens because, you know, everyone loves the Ravens because they've been the best drafting team over the last 20 years. Well, guess what, John? When's the last time they won a playoff game?
It's been a while.
Ten years.
Have to go back to...
Let me rephrase that. When's the last time they've actually won a game and got past the divisional round of the playoffs? 10 years ago.
Yeah, the year they won the Super Bowl. I will say this, and you're the biggest Brady fan I know, and mm-hmm. I'm not too far behind you, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I know you don't think that. Even family members think I don't like Tom Brady. I'm like, listen to what I have to say. I think he's the greatest quarterback ever. I wonder in the last 20 years, if you would put Tom Brady on the Baltimore Ravens, how many Super Bowls they'd have.
Oh, they'd probably have more. Well, look, probably. I mean, look, I don't think this is necessarily just a, like, I agree with you because I, you know, again, having quarterback to me is the most important. I think the problem I have with the, with the praise of the Ravens is that they don't necessarily hit. I mean, you know, I'm going through and reading some of the I mean, they just traded away Marquise Brown, the number one wide receiver they picked just a few seasons ago. Not to mention
all the... Which I thought was a good trade.
That's a good trade and probably a bad example. Not a great example, but just, you know...
No, but they moved on.
They moved on, which, again, if you listen to some of these draft experts, you'd say, oh, wow, this is the greatest draft in the history of drafts ever, but what does it amount to? 9-7. Well, you know, at the same time, you also have a ton of players on that list that didn't pan out. Like, the problem is, you know, speaking specifically about the Patriots, you know, people want to, you know, say it was the worst draft this, or Belichick's, I saw someone say he was like a bottom five GM, and I'm like, have any of you taken just a second to actually compare and contrast between the actual other NFL teams? Because I can guarantee you that his success and failure rate is not in a bottom five, and I'd argue that it's probably in the top echelon of the NFL across the league because
for his whole career, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I don't think it was look, six Super Bowls
but,
by
but
accident.
Like this, yeah, but I mean, this idea that like the last 5 years have been trash, but then you go out and you ignore all the hits. It's like the problem with it is like there's no the easy way out is to just criticize Belichick because guess what? You're never wrong. You can sit there and harp on these picks, and we see it. There's a handful of media members within Boston that's their shtick. That's what they do, and that's right. All they know, and it exposes their inability to actually judge and evaluate talent. Like, I'm not sitting here pretending like I'm this great evaluator of talent, but I also don't masquerade around as someone who knows, you know, what the team's thinking, which is what a lot of these Boston media members are doing.
Or what the player is, and yeah, exactly. I go to guys that actually do this, like my friend John Serenitas, Dr. Yeah. Football. He knows more of this than any person I've ever met. I think I'd put him up against anyone because he's coached and played football, and he's very analytical about this. He liked the pick. He thinks it's going to be a good fit for the Patriots, what they do on offense. He thinks that, you know, that Belichick drafted some older guys this year because you want them ready-made. I think the average age of the players drafted this year in this draft were higher than normal because of COVID.
You had some guys stay
all the year, transfers. It was just the way it worked out. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I'm not an expert on guard play. The one thing I really got irritated with about all of this is when people would come out and say, you know, John Hanna was the greatest guard in the history of football. What did he ever win? Quentin Nelson's the greatest guard in football right now. What did he ever win? Well, I didn't know we judge guards on Super Bowl wins. We do with quarterbacks, rightfully so, but not with guards. Heck, Larry Fitzgerald's one of the three or four greatest wide receivers in the history of football. What's he ever won? I mean, are we going to now start knocking all wide receivers? Mm-hmm. I mean, when people went there, I was like, oh, okay, that doesn't make any sense to me, right? You know, it's just like this other argument that I don't even understand. But back to the original point, Ian, I think this is beyond, you know, the draft. It's life. It's society, whether COVID or politics. We're in a time now where people seek affirmation instead of information because it's a lot easier to just find someone you agree with and latch onto than actually do the research and go, well, this guy, you know, whatever, or whatever profile the player has.
Well, I saw that kind of play out where it's like you had people reacting to this pick and then a couple days later actually looking at the film and saying, oh, it's not that bad of a pick, but still doubling down and saying it was a reach.
Yeah.
Well, no, it was only a reach within, like I said, the echo chamber in which you exist, because it's a reach because your fellow analysis or quote unquote draft experts, basically anyone with a, you know, NFL draft in their profile, said that he was a third round grade, but clearly the Patriots didn't value him that low, and other teams didn't. I know the 49ers said that he was a talent, and I know I criticized Sean McVay the other day, and whether or not his, you know, explanation was legit or not, whatever, you know, we'll move on. I'm not going to criticize him for that, but you know, I think maybe they, again, I still think the reaction was a little off base, whether or not the intent was bad or not. I still think, you know, you're a 36-year-old man, like, stop giggling, like, you know, just react and act like a coach of a Super Bowl champion. But, you know, clearly there's other teams in the NFL that had him ranked high. And if you look at it, the two guards that went before, like, What's Belichick going to do? It's like, oh, well, you know what? Mel Kiper had him going in the third round, so we're not. No, you're going to take players that your team needs. Who the hell cares what other teams rank other players? Because it has nothing to do with you. Like, and I saw people do that. It's like, well, all these other teams had him. Well, who the F cares about what other teams think? It's not the Patriots. It's not the Chiefs. You know, if you're a Chiefs fan, why do you care what the Raiders? Well, I mean, division rival, of course, but you know what I mean? Like, why do you care what their big board is? Or why do you care what the Washington Commanders' big board is? It doesn't matter to your team. And it's like this idea that, you know, the problem too is, John, is like, you know, people make these snap judgments and they just get basically etched into stone as fact. So now all of a sudden, Bill Belichick's a terrible drafter. No, he's not. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, you cannot win 6 Super Bowls. And look, yes, Tom Brady had a big, big part of that. And trust me, I'm the first one who's going to sit here and say that, you know, Tom Brady was a more important part of the winning than Belichick. But that is because I believe that the quarterback being on the field, a great quarterback is always going to surpass the value of a great coach. That's just how what I believe. It's not necessarily a Brady-Belichick thing, but I'm consistent. It doesn't change the fact that there have been many, many great players drafted and members that were foundational pieces to Super Bowl championships. Like, you can't sit there and say Belichick has been a bad drafter over the last decade when they've won 3 Super Bowls and went to 4 with guys littered across that lineup that were drafted by the Patriots or undrafted free agents. And it's just silly to me that we continue to do this. And it's like, you know, these people are, you know, that perpetuate this narrative are quote unquote respected media members. So what does that do? Well, guess what? The casual fan who doesn't really pay attention to the day-to-day stuff is going to see that and say, oh, of course Belichick's a bad drafter. And I'm just like scratching my head like, oh my God, I can't do it anymore, John. I can't. It drives me nuts.
Well, let's talk NBA playoffs then. No, but actually, the big thing with all of this is again, it's almost like giving a review of a restaurant that you didn't eat at.
Yeah.
You know, just like, I hear that place isn't very good, but I've never eaten there. And then you go there and go, pretty good. You know, the service was good. It was clean. I've gone back 6 times and it's very consistent. So, yeah, I just find it all kind of laughable. And it is kind of interesting. And look, I'll be the first guy to knock Belichick, absolutely. But in this city, you know, the two most successful teams have been the Red Sox and the Patriots, yet they get more, they get pushed back more from a lot of people than, say, the Bruins and the Celtics, who, you know, had nice runs here, but have won one championship each over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. When the Red Sox won 4 and the Patriots won 6. I mean, Danny Ainge won one title here, and he was lauded as, like, the greatest general manager in the history of the NBA. And, you know, the Bruins, I mean, would they really ever knock Sweeney as the general manager? You know, I mean, is this kind of like, because they kind of plug along? I mean, they have. They
Don Sweeney was mocked 20 minutes after he got hired after the 2015 NHL draft.
After that draft, yeah. I mean, and unfortunately, he was hired 20 minutes before the draft. Yeah. So, yeah, no, but that, but again, baseball and football are bigger than hockey and basketball. And Ainge played here, right? So it was almost like he's one of us in a sense. And Belichick's an easy target. He's a grumpy old guy that doesn't seem to really care.
And really doesn't, and doesn't care. Honestly, that's the thing.
Yeah,
like,
that's
the
what
person
I mean.
Who cares
that's
the least about all this is Bill Belichick. Like, he doesn't care. Like, he doesn't care. Like, I guarantee he probably shares the same opinion about Volan as I do. These people read this stuff and it's like, you see the reaction from teams and players. And that's the one really great thing about the access to the players now is like, There is becoming more of a habit of calling out BS like that, like calling out things of that nature. And look, you can tell very quickly who did the work and who didn't, because the folks that were running to Twitter to, you know, latch on to the whole, oh, it was a massive reach, the biggest reach ever,
right.
Well, it's obvious that they didn't do the work because, you know, it wasn't that long after that the folks that actually do the film study, you know, the really good reporters and analysis out there actually came out. It was like, no, look at this. And again, you look at the pattern and guess what? All these, oh, Cole Strong was a huge reach. Or Cole Strange, Jesus. I mean, now Ben Volen's got me doing it. I'm literally looking at his tweet right now. So I will blame him fully for that.
Well,
for me, just
the other thing too is I was calling Curtis Strange the golfer, so you know.
Yeah,
that was,
well, no, I mean, look, you're the NFL beat writer or lead writer for the NFL. Get it right. Like, I mean, if you're gonna sit there and criticize a player or call this guy a bust on his like biggest, like, I mean, Devin McCourty came out and said it, and he was right. Like, Albert Breer ripped Devin McCourty when he was picked.
Yep.
And guess what? Devin McCourty, 13 years later, one of the best Patriot draft picks of all time. And it's like, you don't win Super Bowls without Devin McCourty. I mean, hell, Devin McCourty was so good, you went out and got his exact replica and won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's like, pretty good, right? Get his win, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, who cares about these knee-jerk reactions from guys that
Brady
aren't...
Brady doesn't have a twin. That
I know,
would be
right? That'd be great. It's me. I'm just...
His twin is Michael Jordan, unfortunately.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's no longer available to play as two sociopaths.
Oh, man.
But, no, I mean, he's not trolling Volan for, you know, by accident, right? And this is kind of what he does. And there's a lot of good guys in here. You know, I think, you know, Andrew Callahan from the Herald is actually someone who gets involved. And Karen Garrigan, these are good reporters. These are good people that put the time in. And, they, you know, again, Volan now has some sort of national profile. And that's where people go at it with this. You know, let me try to throw bombs out there because that's more interesting than actually giving you information.
It's lazy writing. And I will go to my grave believing that. So only a couple minutes. I do want to comment real quick on the Celtics game. I don't know about you. I'm really not that concerned. I honestly look at yesterday and I just thought that was just a bad game. Like I look at the cold shooting from Jaylen Brown and obviously Jason Tatum early. Jason obviously started hitting some threes there late. But I thought it was a bad game. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you just play poorly. Like, I don't think this is an indicator of any sort of deep-seated issue. Now, please correct me if I'm wrong. If you saw something different,
the only problem is that I think Milwaukee makes you shoot poorly because they play elite defense. You're coming off a series against Brooklyn with no resistance from the Nets. Now you've got Milwaukee, which is a real team led by a real leader in Giannis, who, you know, now people are finally coming along that he's the best player in basketball. And now the new thing is to just not quite honor him with that. They say he's the best two-way player in basketball. Well, that's pretty good because he's elite on the defensive end. We saw that yesterday. The thing with the Celtics is, again, this is like a new series. You know, talk about going from – it's like if in the NFL playoffs you went from this, like, bruising physical team in the divisional round to this finesse team the next round. You know, maybe the first quarter you're like, whoa, this is different than last week's game. So there's going to be an adjustment from that. They had better win tomorrow night, though, get this series back even, because if you're down 0-2 and Milwaukee has home court advantage and you're going back to games 3 and 4 Milwaukee, that's going to be tough. Brown is going to have to be better. Tatum's going to have to be better. I think Milwaukee forced a lot of those issues, though, because they played pressure defense, got the Celtics out of rhythm a little bit. I may be the only person, and I think me and maybe Brian Scalabrine, I didn't really have a problem with the 53-point attempts because that's what Milwaukee forces you to do. They hit 18 of them, which is 36%, which is – it's okay. They were 10 for 34 from 2 points. On 2-point shots, which is 29%, they just couldn't get to the rim. So again, in Milwaukee has great rim protection. So if you clean that up, you'll be right there.
I would say this. I'm not necessarily down on the attempts. I think the timing was not right. Like
gotcha.
I felt like there were times where, you know, look, this game was really fairly close for a good chunk of it, and I felt like instead of, you know, hucking up three, especially, look, I mean, a guy like Peyton Pritchard, I mean, I was about ready to start the Peyton Pritchard fan club. I mean, he had a bad game. You know, he had some good looks and he was just off. So to me, I'm not gonna sit there and criticize the guy for it. Oh, the kid. I mean, he's younger, much younger than I am. So yeah, he's a kid.
You're all kids to me.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I'm not look. It was a bad game on his part. But I think unfortunately, and this is a bad habit the Celtics get into, and I think a lot of teams nowadays do, is that, you know, hucking up threes and hitting threes are going to close the gap a lot more, but sometimes it's smarter basketball just to get points, get to the, you know, and yes, I know Milwaukee was certainly making it tougher for them, but you know, sometimes the Celtics can, you know, their heads can get scrambled a bit, and let's face it, you're going to have to stay focused when going up against the team. Like, yes, Giannis is great, but you know, outside of Milwaukee, let's face it, the guy gets away with a lot. I mean, the fact that, first of all, the, especially when Scott Foster is on the court, let's just put it that way. But, you know, you're sitting there, you're watching, let's go to that foul that, I think it was his third foul, where he basically dropped a shoulder and charged into Jason Tatum. That was after,
he does that a lot.
Yeah, he does that a lot, and he did that twice on that one sequence and didn't get called until the second time. And it's like,
right. Look.
You can't just allow that to happen, because then you're dictating the game. Now, I don't think much was going to change, because I think the Celtics were just off. And even that situations like that, if they're playing their game, they can overcome disadvantages like that. Because let's face it, that's how it is. Like, I know Jan and you know, people put it. I saw a couple people tweet this, and this kind of sums it up. It's like, you know, everyone, you know, Giannis is a great player, okay, but there is a, I'm not going to say dirty, because I think that involves quite, there's an edge to him that pushes the limit. And often, a good amount of times it does go over the limit. He just doesn't get penalized for it. But, you know, the reason why, and this is, you know, someone, I'm somewhat quoting someone's tweet here, because he'll go out and do these things and then go up on in front of camera and says he likes pudding or something like that, something corny.
Well, he's so likable.
Well, part of it, look, I mean, it's smart on his part to play this game. Mm-hmm. Like, because he gets out on the court and it's like, it's frustrating to watch as someone who's, you know, a team's going up against it, because it's like, obviously he's going to have the size advantage on people, but like, you know, throwing elbows and really being physical and getting frustrated, and it's like, look, the guy literally shoved Marcus Smart to the ground at one point, like two hands pushed to the ground and didn't get called. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care what team you're, that's a foul. And then it's like, you get Bucks fans today complaining about Marcus Smart boxing him out and putting his arm around his like leg, you know, and barely not even pulling on him. Like, oh, Marcus Smart is a dirty player. No, it's like, look, if you're going to call Marcus Smart a dirty player, why don't you look in the mirror and start with Giannis? Because like, if Marcus Smart is a dirty player, and I'd reckon that Giannis would be as well.
With an edge, which I think is one of the reasons he is the best player, because you don't see Durant do that or LeBron generally don't do that. He plays with more of an edge. He's just he's more tenacious and ferocious than the other superstars in the league. So,
but that also has a need for some leniency from the officials, and I think he gets that.
Mm-hmm.
Moses
Malone was the same way. I know it's an old reference, but Moses Malone never fouled out of games. Although the Celtics did get him in foul trouble yesterday. He got his fourth foul with 3:37 left in the third quarter.
They didn't want to call the, like, look, I mean, I was just talking about the third foul. I mean, like, you could have called it easily on that first part of that play.
But my point was, he went to the bench, and the Celtics never made Milwaukee pay.
I think that was where the game was.
Take advantage. He goes to the bench. Milwaukee's up six. When he comes back to start the fourth quarter, Milwaukee's up eight. They actually outscored the Celtics by 2 points when he was on the bench. Mm-hmm. That to me was the game, because that's where the Celtics should have gotten the thing even going into the fourth quarter. Now all of a sudden you've got 12 minutes left on even terrain, and you're at home, so maybe you pull that one out. So yeah, but he's Dwayne Wade was the same way. Dwayne Wade was also a very dirty player. John Stockton, Karl Malone, and again, all superstar players. And I think Giannis a little bit gets away with it from even the media because he's so damn likable, right?
Well, Dwayne Wade, like I said, they play it up pretty well. Yeah, I mean, look, I think he knows what he's doing. Like, that's what I say. When he gets up on camera and has his, like, corny, like, jokes, everyone's like, okay, ha-ha. You know, let's not forget that, you know, you shoved a guy that's half your size to the ground and didn't get called for. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know, let's forget about the flying elbows and stuff like that. I get it. You're bigger than everyone else. But, you know, for someone that is so adept at doing the Euro step and having ball control, he seems to lose a lot of control when he's, you know, one-on-one with someone and, you know, throwing elbows and stuff like that. So,
well, I tell you what, I hope the Brewers don't play the Red Sox in the World Series because you hate the state of Wisconsin. You feud with everybody in Wisconsin.
Well, no. Look, I mean, look.
Good thing they don't have an NHL team, or else you'd really be going crazy.
No offense, but, like, I mean, it's cold up in Wisconsin. I live down in Florida. It's the exact opposite here, you know? It is, right, yeah. But, no, it'll be interesting. Like I said, I mean, I agree with you, though. Like, regardless of how you view the officiating or everything like that, the Celtics lost because of how they played. And having, you know, with all that said, they had that opportunity to come back. But they didn't. They didn't take advantage of it. And look, I mean, that's why I think, like, yes, you know, you're sitting there and saying, no doubt about it, Milwaukee did a lot to frustrate the Celtics. But I think at the end of the day, even that type of frustration is usually overcome by the Celtics because they're a really good team. I just think they had a really off night. And look, I mean, they swept their first round opponent. Milwaukee was in a 6-game series. They had just played the other. You know, there's a little bit of that in that situation. Yeah. And to me, I think I look at it like, okay, they're going to come out, they're going to play their game and take advantage of the Chris Middleton-less you know, Bucks in game two, and then things are going to kind of get back into the rhythm, and we're going to have a series here. So, but that's going to do it for us here today. We actually went over a little bit because we started so late, but we will be back throughout the week, and we're actually going to have some full episodes as we kind of really dive into the playoffs in the NBA and Stanley Cup playoffs begin tonight, especially if you're a Bruins fan that gets kicked off today. So it's going to be pretty fun. So give us a follow on Twitter at FPC Radio Live. I'm at IGLEN31. And, of course, give John a follow at JohnSap25. He has one of those fancy blue check marks I always like to mention. But I do not include him with my criticism of those said check marks. So, yeah. Anyways, have a great day, folks, and we'll talk to you later.